Good afternoon, folks. Welcome to Warbirds in Review 2020-2021. We're going to put them all together here. We got a great show today, and I'm going to be introducing our speakers here. This is Tyrus Lysenko, and he's written this book. It's called The Great Navy Birds of Lake Michigan, and it'll be available for sale over at the Merchandise Mart over here, and Tyrus will be glad to sign it for him, give you a little note there. And he has his guest with him today. He will be conducting the program. He has his guests is Mark Clark, Dick Hansen, Steve Craig, Conrad Hufstadler. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
That's pretty good then. And then Dave Kessler. Okay. Now, Tyrus, you own A&T Recovery. Is that correct?
50% owner, yes. A&T Recovery. I'm 50% owner, yes. Okay. I gotta adjust my mic, sorry,
okay,
folks.
Okay, good.
50% owner of A&T Recovery, yes.
And it's
I'm
on the
It's
on the recovery and preservation of aircraft loss underwater, the Navy over a period of time. So you've written this book. Now, would you go ahead with your program now?
I will. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for coming. First off, I'd like to thank the people who made this possible. Obviously, Sam, Connie, Kyle, Scott, EAA Warbirds America, thank you for all you've done to put this together. I need them to roll the film. Scott, can you roll that film for me, please? So, as you saw, you understand how the aircraft were lost. This aircraft, the reason we were able to secure it for private restoration was we had completed a contract for the National Naval Aviation Museum. And there's a thing in law, Title 10, United States Code, Section 2572. It's the law that allows VFW halls and that sort of thing to have tanks out front on loan. It also allows the exchange of military equipment to enhance the historic collections. And exchanging an aircraft such as this that would go into private hands and be restored and shown to all of us is enhancement of military collections. So we had completed a contract, and the contract allowed us to have ownership of several of these aircraft. This one in particular was about 210 feet deep in Lake Michigan. So I'm going to do a little bit of diver kind of thing. This aircraft was very difficult for us to recover. And it was difficult for us to recover because it was standing upright, nose down, in about 210 feet of water. If you look at this aircraft, you'll see that there's not a single place that we can attach lifting points to pick it up. And we never sling an aircraft because you damage it. But up at the top, there is a lifting assembly. And that lifting assembly takes four Zeus fasteners to open the door, and then the lifting assembly is in there. If you're looking at the videotape, you can see our remotely operated vehicle attempting to open that little door. So at that point in life, I think I was 30 years old, and my partner and my main crew member, they're a whole lot older than me. Actually, one of them sitting in there, you can take a look at them. They're really old compared to me. Anyway, so for months, we went out with their ideas and both of them trying to open that door so that we could get that lifting assembly. The reason for that is 210 feet deep, there's a thing called nitrogen narcosis, right? Which makes it very dangerous for us to dive, right? So most people describe nitrogen narcosis as being drunk. I describe it as being on a whole lot of Xanax, except for you feel the pain. And what I mean by pain, when you go to that depth, the water temperature is 38 degrees. And I don't care what type of gloves you have on or what type of hood you have on, suit you have on, within 10 minutes, you feel that 38 degrees. And it's excruciating painful. The thing about the nitrogen narcosis is that you don't care. All you want to do is go to sleep. And you forget what you're really doing there because you're looking at your freezing hands, thinking about your freezing ears, saying, I wish I could just lay down and sleep, right? So we tried for months to do that, to open it with the remote operated vehicle. You notice the nice tools we make? Pretty good. Pretty good remote operated vehicle operator. It was either Keith or Al, and I think we got one of them open after about 3 or 4 months. So what happened was, come November, Keith and I, who's in the audience, had had enough of the remote operated vehicle, and we decided to dive to 210 feet. And my partner, Al, now there's another thing you have to notice. You see how dark it is? You can only see about that far where your light is pointed, so you don't have a perspective. So Keith and I decided to make that dive, and my partner decided that we were going to hook on to the tail tie-down of this aircraft. So Keith and I went down, we hooked on to the tail tie-down of the aircraft, and we actually lifted it that way, which picked the aircraft up like this. Now, Keith is wonderful. You remember the Muppets where they had Beaker, who did all the experiments? So we said, Keith, go down there and attach lifting assembly here. Well, we did that, which brought the aircraft upside down. Then, again, we sent Keith to which was now the underside of the aircraft to actually open up those Zeus fasteners and to get the lifting assembly. Pause the video. Okay, so then you do that, but the divers have to hang on the line. They have to decompress. So did you see what Keith's talent he developed while hanging on the line? He became the world's leading expert in blowing bubble rings doing that, right? So anyway, so we recovered that aircraft and a second aircraft in November of 1991, and I called my good friend Mark Clark. And Mark Clark, I asked him to sell those aircraft for us. So I'm going to turn it over to Mark Clark because he's going to tell you what happened next.
Thank you, Taurus.
Your mic's not on.
Testing. There we go.
Okay.
Thanks, Taurus. I have to say that being involved with these Lake Michigan recovery airplanes is one of the highlights of
Show
my 40-some-year career in aviation sales, mostly warbirds down in Rockford. When Taurus called me, I knew this project was going on, so he said, well, we're going to have two Wildcats in a warehouse kind of in downtown Chicago. So he says, you think you can sell them? And I said, yes, sir, I can sell those airplanes. So I kind of went through my customer list, and I kind of identified some people that wanted restoration projects and wanted something unique that has a fantastic story. So I kind of picked up my top three people, and I said, okay, let's go down to this warehouse. I don't remember the exact date, but I'll be down there early in the morning, and you guys come down. So I called them, and they came in, and so we had the first customer went in, Mr. Kinsler here. He went in. He was from the Detroit area. He came over early and went in and looked at the airplane and walked around it, and he said, well, I've got to kind of think about it a little bit. And I said, well, you can think about it as long as you want, but I have two other people that are interested in the airplane. And he says, oh, yeah, sure, right. About that time, there was I think my cell phone rang, and it was Mr. Hansen and his partner, Jim Porter. And Kinsler looked at me, and he says, oh, there's really somebody out there? And I said, yeah, there's really somebody out there. And I said, I've got somebody else who's coming up this afternoon. Yeah, Butch Schroeder from Danville, who restored a beautiful Mustang many years ago. So, Dave, they're out there, Dave, and I told Hansen and Porter, I said, you guys have to wait. There's somebody in here already. So Dave says, okay, I'll take the airplane. Fine, easy deal. About 15 minutes, and he decided yes. And so I went out the door, and Dave walked out the door, and I invited Mr. Hansen and Mr. Porter in, and I said, you have the choice of that one over there. He said, well, what about that one? I said, well, that guy just bought it. So, and I said, just remember, there's another guy coming yet today. So they walked around and looked at the airplane, and they ultimately purchased the second airplane. But is that picture, that's the picture taken in the warehouse. The airplanes were still there. They smelled like an old aquarium. You could smell it, just the fishy smell. There was still water kind of dripping out of the airplanes. It was an amazing sight to see these airplanes that have been down there since during the war. And like I say, it was one of the most interesting projects I've been lucky enough to be involved in, and selling lots of interesting airplanes over the years. So I'll turn it over to Dave, and he can kind of tell you where his part began in involvement in the airplane.
Okay. So Dave had one question for me, and so I'm going to let you tell it, but I want to make sure he tells you about the question he had for me, because you'll see what a perfect gentleman he is.
Good afternoon, everybody. Yeah, my name is Dave Kensler, and I just got into warbirds. If you guys are ever looking for an airplane, I had a pretty good reference. I went to Paul Poberesny in 1988 and said, you know, I'd like to get into warbirds, but I don't know anything about them, and, you know, I'm a bonanza driver. And he says, well, you should call Mark Clark at Courtesy Aircraft in Rockford, Illinois, where EAA started. In the ensuing years, he and I have done 13 buy-sell transactions with warbirds.